Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome to this Peak Prosperity Podcast. I'm your host, of course, Chris Martinson. And today we are going to be discussing risk mitigation strategies in these crazy market times. You know, the stock market's powering to all-time new highs, and yet there's fundamental data that suggests that might not be the wisest thing. People have been in the market, out of the market. We're watching retail money flows scoot back and forth as bonds started to sell off recently. There were record outflows from bond funds. People are moving their money hither to and fro. And the question is, how does one maintain safety and the sanctity of their sanity and their portfolio's gains in this particular market environment? So today, to talk with us about that, are our friends at New Harbor Financial. We've got Mike Preston and John Loder today. Mike, John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thank you.
Hello, Chris, and hello, listeners. Nice to be here. Thanks.
Excellent. So where do we start in this? Let's talk about where we are in this market and why it's necessary to have risk mitigation strategies. Maybe we should start with what that even means. Who wants to start?
Sure. I'll kick us off here, Chris. This is John. You know, here we are in 2014. It's, really nice for us humans to think about new years, new calendar years, and think about changes and new perspectives. You know, from an investing standpoint, the change of a calendar year is really nothing more than psychological. It's an arbitrary day of 365 in a given year. And, I think it's important to understand why we are in a new year. You know, we still have to be cognizant of the environment we're in and where we've been for we would say, better than a year. Last year saw some remarkable, if not against all odds, kind of performance in at least some markets. But it's important to realize that the change of a calendar year doesn't change the reality of what was in place. The way we see it and have seen it for some time is that we're in a pretty rare environment in terms of risk. You kind of think along three broad lines as to, defining a pretty extraordinary risk environment. On the one hand, you have valuations, and let's talk about the stock market. The valuations, how much stocks are trading for, the price that stocks are trading for as a multiple of the earnings of stocks, is at levels that's rarely been seen in history. And the times where we've been at these levels have categorically been risky times to be invested in the stock market. Add on top of that, rampant degrees of speculation. Folks putting caution to the wind and speculating just because it's at least has been working out. The jury's always out as to whether that will continue to work out. We still have near record amounts of margin debt as one sign of rampant speculation. And then sentiment. Sentiment just broadly. People's bullish or bearish tendencies. And we recently registered record levels of bullish sentiment on the part of investment managers, and very few lonely bears out there. In other words, everybody has been on the same side of the boat, which these things together have largely explained why the stock market had such a strong up year last year, even despite the risky environment. So the change of the calendar year really hasn't changed any of those things. So, now more than ever, we think exercising and preaching caution is very important. And we'd be happy to articulate some of the specifics about what we mean by risk management and addressing those risks.
Well, excellent. So, John, where do we put something like Facebook buying WhatsApp for $19 billion and or Tesla trading for, I guess, near the market cap of General Motors at this point? Do you toss that down under speculation, or is that just a marker of sentiment at this point?
Well, geez, you almost have to talk about each of those separately, but they're kind of the same thing. Buy first, ask questions later is kind of the sentiment that's going on right now. Facebook buying WhatsApp, you almost could change the calendar year to 1999 and have, 30 different stories that look just like that. There haven't been very many tough questions on the part of investors as to why that was a good move and what does it mean for me as a shareholder and why it's going to be good for me. Folks seem to want to be in that stock with reckless abandon. Tesla, I'm actually a big fan of the paradigm shift there, but I I do not think the speed and trajectory of the ramp up in that stock can be justified, even if in the longer term it proves to be a much bigger market share than it already has. The simple theme there is that markets in general, and when you look at individual stocks like that, have ramped up without much of a breather at all, and that's just not normal. A healthy market, even one that trades much higher over time, does have pauses as investors digest and rationalize the moves higher, and that always comes in the form of pauses or relief, moves to the downside, even if the longer trend is higher. So yeah, those are just two headline examples of investors, from very sophisticated institutional managers to do-it-yourselfers at home, kind of putting these objective risk signals on the sideline and jumping in and asking questions later. That's very much our view on the reality of the markets, certainly now and for much of last year.
Well, certainly when I see I consider those two examples of throwing caution to the wind, which of course makes me more cautious, because we've seen that story before, right? So I didn't know if you were just, where you were starting to categorize those particular moves. Not to pick on those two in particular, I've got a dozen others that we could talk about. That's for another podcast and another day. Mike, I'm interested. You guys are frontline, obviously. You've got clients that you work with on a daily basis. You're in the markets on a daily basis, and at times like this, prudence is of course exceptionally important. But man, it's hard to do. How are you? What's going on with you as you are trying to negotiate this world of investing at this point in time?
Well, maintaining discipline and patience here, Chris, is very, very important, whether you're a money manager or an individual investor. It's times like this that it's really, truly the hardest thing to do, to sit out, to remain in cash to a large degree, to watch others brag about the easy gains that are being made, when the data set that you're looking at is telling you to be extremely cautious, as it has been telling us for some time. Human behavior never changes. And we're seeing amongst not just our clients, but people that we talk to, we're seeing a lot of frustration, not necessarily frustration with either how they're managing their money or how we're managing their money. They just feel frustrated that they can't, in a safe way, take part in more of the gains that they perceive others are taking. So, the sense is that everyone's partying except them. And that can be very mentally and what we're dealing with now as money managers, and we think a lot of your listeners out there that are managing money for themselves are also battling this. So the prevailing sentiment out there for people that are in the stock market that have made good gains in the last year or so, even if it's been a risky environment that whole time, is that they can get out whenever they want to. And history has shown that it's often difficult to do that. I mean, if you look at the nature of the market, it's really literally all straight up last year. And we're seeing a little bit of a change in character early this year, a little more volatility. We had about a 6% drop about a month ago, a few weeks ago, January. We came right back to the highs. And it's the self-reinforcing behavior of the market that when people go in and buy dips, it keeps coming right back. And that's eventually, when a bear market develops, that's what causes so much damage, because people have been lulled into complacency and they think, well, I've been buying each and every drop. I'll just buy each and every drop all the way down, until, of course, they don't want to look at their statements or their accounts anymore. And then a bottom forms some years later. But right now in the community, we're seeing more pressure psychologically, really, than we've ever seen in our business, certainly more so than in the 2007-2008 time frame. So most of our job these days is essentially counseling people to remain patient, to not get tempted into these risk markets. Look, the job of this bull market is to shake every bear off and to suck every last bull in, and the data set just doesn't support that. And so we're doing our best to make sure that people maintain disciplined and safe.
Well, that's excellent, because a couple of things have been missing from this big run-up, and one of them is volume, and the second has been retail participation, and there is a disturbing trend historically that tops are made when finally the dumb money is distributed to use a term that Wall Street likes to throw around, kind of like Muppet, only different, and so the idea here is that, you know, this tops are made when the final distribution is made from those who have something to sell to people who want to buy it at any price. And so, yeah, the market structure has been changing a little bit. 2014 started out a little bit differently than the prior year had gone. Obviously, we've had a recent run-up again, and so we're sort of hovering at those all-time highs. But let's talk about how does somebody really have risk control in this environment? What sort of things are on your checklist as you're thinking about how you're going to help people protect their capital?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing we'd like to say, it's not a black and white kind of thing. It really comes down to matters of degree, mm-hmm. and extreme times call for extreme degrees and vice versa. You know, so where we are right now, you know, investors need to ask themselves, you know, could they ever imagine a time if they knew with some high degree of confidence or had a high degree of confidence that there were a fairly large pullback in the market happening? If they had that confidence, would they be willing to scale back their stock exposure? That's really what it comes back down to. And if folks could find that within themselves, we can't think of a better time to think about doing that in probably in a dramatic way, particularly for those who are or have been heavily invested in stocks and benefited from the significant rally last year and the years preceding that. You know, the right amount to be in stocks, it's kind of an art more than a science, and we as investment advisors, you know, certainly like to talk about this with our clients and share with them our perspective as relates to our understanding of their needs, what we feel the right amount of exposure is. But, you know, it's not obscene to think about something as low as 15 or 20% in stocks, you know, as off-kilter as that might seem to a Main Street, Wall Street firm, we think times sometimes call for that, and we can't think of a better time right now where that may be an appropriate allocation for someone who is concerned about capital preservation. Even at that, you know, one can talk about hedging strategies that we can get into a little detail a bit later on how to kind of have some stock exposure, but still put some defined parameters as to what kind of risk one is willing to bear with that stock exposure. They also talk about other asset classes. You know, cash is a very appropriate asset class, though it's not paying much in the way of yield right now, thank you to the monetary policies of the Federal Reserve and their peers across the world. But, you know, cash does have a benefit of keeping powder dry so that you can do the buying low, as the saying goes, when prices present at more attractive levels. And sometimes you can't have enough cash if the move downward is large and swift enough. And that's obviously only something you'll know in hindsight, but darn, cash feels pretty good to have when those kinds of resets happen. You know, we do believe some exposure to precious metals and commodities is sensible in appropriate allocations. You know, one divergence, if you will, from last year is that some of the most revolved assets, as Mike alluded to earlier, have actually seen some reprieve this year. You know, precious metals and particularly gold mining stocks are amongst the strongest performers this year. And in fact, the strongest sector in the stock market, even though they were the worstly beaten down sector last year. You know, some people might wonder what's changed, what happened to make that the case. Nothing really changed other than psychology. The fundamentals that underlie that sector really haven't changed all that much. It's just simply that people got tired out of selling out of panic last year, and there's been a bit of a buying back into that sector this year. And that alone can cause a dramatic shift. You know, so far year to date, precious metal mining sector is up about 25%. For no other good reason than the psychology change and the buying and selling dynamics changed rather abruptly right around the change of the calendar year.
This is Mike, Chris. I think I'd like to just kind of repeat a little bit of what John's been talking about. I think it's important. If you're in a market that's really very, very risky, or at least shows a data set or a number of indicators that would cause great concern, and again, just to recap, that's very high valuation, you know, Shiller price earnings ratio above 25, lots of speculation, and New York Stock Exchange margin debt hitting all-time records, extremes in sentiment, you know, bulls, higher than really recorded ever before, except for maybe one or two instances, and bears, that is the people that are negative on the stock market, just registered recently at 14%. You know, in other words, only 14 out of 100 people think the market's going to go down. So, you know, three legs of the stool, so to speak, if you you take a look at valuation, speculation, and sentiment, are amongst the most hostile as you would have seen in maybe just a few other times in the last 100 years or so. So, you know, risk control is paramount here. So in addition to what John was just talking about, reducing equities down probably below 20%, raising some cash, you know, take a look at your employer-sponsored retirement plans, whether they're 401ks or 403bs. A lot of these plans have guaranteed investment accounts. Sometimes they're called stable value funds. And these funds often pay 3%. Not all plans have them. But if your plan has it, you should take a good look at it. Now, we will offer the caveat that these plans are not FDIC insured, but you know, we think they're pretty safe and certainly a heck of a lot safer than a stock fund within a 401k. If you don't have a stable value account, you take a look at either the money market option or the short-term bond fund options that are in there, preferably U.S. Treasury short-term bond fund. You're not going to get a lot of return, probably less than 1% annual dividend, and maybe a little bit of appreciation in the next year or so if we get a little bit of a shakeup in the market. I think there likely to be a little bit of a flight to quality, and so the real short-term bond should be safe. Also, if you're more sophisticated or working with a more sophisticated money manager, you can think about hedging your account with options. There's two different ways to do that. You can use put options on an index or on an individual stock, which is a lot like buying insurance on your house or even life insurance. If something bad happens, it basically pays off. It's a contract. And also call option strategies are useful to mitigate some downside risk. So there's probably too much to go into detail there, but options contracts can be very important, and it's something that we're using a lot right now and generally use a lot of and as part of our strategy to hedge risk.
And so to make sure I understood correctly about bonds at this point in time, you're saying let's not write off bonds altogether, but keep it to the shorter, higher quality bonds. That's where you want to be at this point. And you mentioned treasuries. Where are you on corporate issues and, say, munis at this point in time?
So Chris, I think it's important to talk about bonds because a lot of people have categorically written bonds off as an asset class. You know, it's almost universal truth right now that people expect interest rates to go higher, and most folks understand, rightly so, that when interest rates go higher over time, that's generally not a good thing for bonds. But we don't think it's quite that simple. We think that, you know, some bonds do deserve a place in a properly diversified and protected portfolio. But understanding the basics of bonds is important to know, you know, likely what segment of the bond markets are likely to be relatively immune to some of those risks that we just talked about. So just as a simple general rule, longer-term bonds are more susceptible to interest rate spikes than shorter-term bonds. There's a measurement called duration. It's closely related to the maturity of a bond. But basically, if you take a duration of a bond, it expresses the percentage change in the value of that bond for each percentage change in the interest rate, okay? And they work in opposite directions. So, you know, a bond with a duration of 10 would have a 1% increase in interest rates would suffer roughly around a 10% capital loss. That's the simple mechanics of how bonds work in relation to interest rates. So with that in mind, if one believes, and I think it's a prudent belief, that interest rates over time will trend higher, perhaps substantially so, all else being equal, you want to be in shorter-term bonds because the sensitivity to interest rates, all else being equal, is going to be less for those shorter-term bonds. So we particularly like the short end of the bond spectrum, maybe in the, you know, 2 to 7 year range, with an emphasis, again, on things like high-quality treasuries, you know, AAA-rated or not AAA anymore, but U.S. treasuries as a relatively safe place to be. Not as a long-term hold, but for the right here and now where we are. When you talk about kinds of bonds, they're typically referred to as spread product over and above treasuries as the benchmark. So when you talk about corporate bonds, they're usually priced in the form of some higher interest rate relative to a comparable maturity treasury bond. So the spread there is the measure of how much risk people are associating with those corporate bonds relative to ultra-safe treasuries. And you get further out the spectrum to, you know, junk bonds, which are corporate bonds issued by uncreditworthy companies, if you will. When you look at the spread between bonds, corporate bonds, and junk bonds and things like that, we are at very, very razor-thin spread levels, which basically says investors have bid up the prices of those bonds relative to treasuries to say that they don't perceive much risk in those bonds. They've out of desperation, sought out higher yields to the point where they have almost ignored the real risk associated with these bonds relative to treasuries. Perfect example, last year saw record issuance of what we call cov-lite, below investment grade bonds. This only happens in a very speculative market where people are willing to put caution to the wind in search of higher yields, and they're accepting very, very thin, razor-thin spreads relative to treasuries to get that higher yield, seemingly ignoring the real risk associated with those bonds. So we're in favor of keeping it really simple, high-quality treasuries on the very short end, not in a huge amount. You know, again, we probably prefer more cash than treasuries right now. But you can get some yield pickup by having some good shorter treasuries and have a plan to, rotate out of those when we see more attractive prices, be it in stocks or some of these more credit-sensitive type bonds like corporates. We're not even close to being fans of high-yield junk bonds right now, but someday they'll be a good value again.
Someday, but not at these levels, certainly not with a 5 handle or a 5% yield on a triple C rate. It's nuts. So in this environment then where obviously everything from triple C rated junk bonds to equities are very, very highly priced for perfection, then a general risk assessment checklist, we've got our cash positioning, making sure that we've got some powder dry and maybe increasing that cash positioning as things get more elevated, looking at bonds, but of course, keeping that to the shorter lower duration, high quality bonds, that's where you want to be to the extent you're in them, and then hedging risks for the remaining part of your portfolio that happens to be exposed to equities, either puts or covered calls, depending on what goes on. Is that covered? Is that the rough, let's call that the big three for your checklist here?
That's pretty much it, Chris, but don't forget to look at your retirement plans, either at your current employer or your previous employer. A lot of people forget about them, and there's significant assets in there.
Yep.
And a lot of times those accounts are on autopilot, and so we've seen a lot of people we've seen recently have done very well in the last couple of years because they were mostly in stocks, and that's a good thing. It's worked out, but really you're going to want to look at those things and really pare way back your stock exposure in all accounts, but don't forget your retirement accounts.
Yeah, another category there. Some folks own variable annuities, for example. They have been very popular products that folks have bought over the last bunch of years, and that's another class that if folks own variable annuities, they often forget about. They're oftentimes on autopilots. Many of them have very substantial stock market exposure, and many folks aren't aware, much like in the retirement accounts, you can oftentimes get access to a fixed interest account in those variable annuities that might pay upwards of 3%, as Mike alluded to. So for someone who's concerned about risk, don't forget that there may be very safe ways to rejigger those accounts and still get, what one might consider a way above market yield by these guaranteed interest accounts.
Excellent advice there. Yeah, it's easy to forget about those 401ks and also how a variable annuity really works. People maybe think of the word annuity and think that has a defined rate, but the variable is the important term in that. And the exposure of those variables to equities, of course, means they can be variable in both directions. So important advice there. So here we are at this juncture. What's your major advice and how would you talk to me if I was a new client thinking of coming to you about where we are in this particular part of the market cycle?
Well, Rick, Chris, we've talked pretty matter-of-factly about some objective observations that we have and have had. That's our job. We spend our days trying to sort through our own emotions, armed with our objective data, historical context, and all that kind of stuff. But we don't want for a moment, for our clients and certainly the listeners to this podcast, for folks to come away with the sense that we underestimate the emotional, difficulty of the times we're in. It's a very emotionally hard time to be a prudent investor. It's We don't for a moment want to downplay how excruciatingly hard it is in these times. It's very hard. It's hard for us. We work very hard to control our emotions through objective data. But we sympathize. We understand the emotional torment that folks are going through. And it's a function of the kind of phase of the market we're in. That's where having a well-thought-out discipline plan makes all the more sense because, you know, you listen to verbal cues. A lot of people might say, the market is going up. And just that one verbal statement, it tells a lot. You know, it may have gone up. It doesn't mean it's going to continue to go up, but that still comes out that way in a lot of people's minds and even out their lips. But, you know, that we're human too. We understand the pain and the agony of having to make difficult calls at a time where it seems like you can't lose. It's very important to think about it rationally, not emotionally.
And I think I'd add, Chris, you know, after acknowledging, of course, how difficult this is for everyone involved, I mean, everyone's getting psychologically worn out. Really, it's simple basics, you know, just don't lose context of the longer-term market cycle. You know, we think we're still in a secular bear market that started in the year 2000, 14 years into it. You know, we're still in a way are dealing with the issues of the 80s and 90s and just kind of we're in the hangover of that, the after effect of that time. And valuations, again, though, are off the chart, which makes it even more precarious. So don't get tempted to think we're at the dawn of a new era of growth here. It's not very likely, not based on the data we look at. It's much more likely that we're still in a secular bear market versus at the beginning of a secular bull market. And so, stay patient. Very, very hardest thing to do. It may help to work with somebody else in this case if you happen to be prone to being impatient. But just being patient and sitting with a high amount of cash and just waiting, what we acknowledge is a very long time, it seems, maybe even a year or two. It's certainly how long we've been patient here in the last cycle can be very hard, but very, very important. And so temptation to do something is always there, but it's very important to just sit on your hands and rely on the data that we're seeing, which is extreme, very extreme.
It's also just to add, it's also very important to bring it back to one's own life. I mean, you know, we sometimes get caught up in keeping up with our neighbors or the stock indexes in the newspaper or online, and we forget about what we're doing this all for, right? I mean, you know, one wants to be careful not to, in pursuit of that last percentage point of gain, not unwittingly put at risk a potential lifetime of security during retirement by exposing themselves to huge potential for loss. You know, so bringing it back to where one's own life is financially, how on track are you to what you need to achieve? And these are all things that we can and often do sit down with clients about. You know, we bring it back to, you know, where are they in their own financial life? You know, why shoot for the moon when risks are high if you're already got a good situation? And that's really critically important to bring it back to your own life and put it in the context of really what you need to get what you want to have done.
Well, here we are 5 years into living in this funhouse, and the mirrors I don't know if I'm fat or thin anymore. It's been too long. And so I, too, sympathize with people who are, and I talk to people all the time who are in this position where they have cash, they have some funds to invest, they've pulled back a little bit, and frankly, there's nothing that looks appealing to them at this particular moment in time. But, you know, I think history does rhyme a lot, and one of the pieces of advice from Jesse Livermore, way back in the 20s and 30s, a famous investor, was that, you know, sometimes the hardest thing to do is to just do nothing. His advice, I believe, was to just sit on your hands. And so it sounds like this is a time to be patient in your estimation, that when things are this distorted and we know the price of everything, but maybe the value of nothing, we're going to have an adjustment period at some point, that really it's a measure of prudence and responsible cycle investing to know where you are in the cycle. And sometimes that requires being patient and doing nothing.
It's unfortunate but true, Chris. It's exactly right. And that's where we are, and we'll remain so in the way that we manage accounts. And we would urge your listeners to remain patient and calm and wait for better opportunities. As boring as that is, that is the truth.
Well, absolutely. Well, Mike, John, thank you both so much for your time today, and I look forward to our future discussions on this. I really think the way that you are managing portfolios in this environment makes a lot of sense, and I know it does resonate for people, even if it is difficult, you know, given where the markets have been going. But prudence is really the mark of any successful investing strategy, I believe.
Well, we certainly agree with that.
Yeah, we as always, thank you, Chris, for having us on with you and your listeners, and you know, hopefully we'll meet again soon on the same podcast.
We certainly will. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
I know.